Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the control operator for this, the Limar Technical Net. The Limar Technical Net has been going on since 1982, Monday nights at 8 p.m., year in, year out, up until April, under the direction of Dick, A2RIW, who is unfortunately now a silent key. And tonight, I am that control operator, and it'll be a fun experiment to hear, as it is every single Sunday. Different questions, different topics, and different knowledge that we come across. As always, I want to remind everyone of the necessary little bits and pieces. If you or someone that you know would like to ask a question or promote a topic of conversation on the technical net but doesn't have access to the repeater, they can send us email. If you also have a general topic you want to hear discussed, if you have a puzzle you want me to share with the people listening, if you would like me to tap Paul WS2N from the case report on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a video or a news item, the email address to reach me is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. If there's any pertinent links relating to our this episode of the Technical Net, they will be listed on my link page. You can get to it by just typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that will take you to the link page. And if any topics of interest have interesting links that add to your edification, I will post them usually before the end of the Technical Net. If you're a chatty type of a person, we have a chat room available. You can either get there by going to the Limark website and finding the link. And as always, I am streaming this on the internet, so anyone out there without a radio or doesn't have IRLP or Echolink, they can go to their browser and type in technet.ac2gs.com, and they'll get an audio stream. And I always like to remind people that MikeKC2NJI has an archive of technical nets going as far back as September of 2006. His website is amateurradio.tv. When you have a chance, check it out. A lot of very useful information from very clever men with a lot more experience than I have. So keep that all in mind. I'll let it drop for a second and then tell you how we plan to do it this Sunday night. Okay, unfortunately, Andy will not be joining us for another episode of Andy's Corner this Sunday night. Perhaps next Sunday night, we'll see. So we're going to ask, as we always do, for people with questions or topics and take their first name and their call sign and get to them in order and comment and discuss things as they come up. If we have a free time after that, I'll open the subject to any realm of science or medicine. Sometimes people are interested in my take on some aspects of the COVID virus. So if the people are interested and ask a question, I will try as best I can to answer it. At 10:15, we will have the space report with Paul, WS2N, and that should take us to our 11 p.m. closing time, and we'll wish you all a happy week. So, that's the game plan for tonight. I'll start it off as per usual. If anyone has any questions of a technical nature or any topics or any comments about technology or such, please give me your first name and your call sign.
I sure got something, KD2OGB.
Into the 3M for the science section. And if you just know traffic, you can take me earlier. Entering shift.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Zero Charlie 2, Delta Alpha 15, Alpha. Name is good.
Zulu with a question.
Okay, unfortunately, two people doubled. The person that got through didn't have a question, and I assume the other person did. So the person who said that they had a question, could you repeat yourself, please?
Yes.
Kilo Delta 2, Uniform Quebec Kilo.
KD 2, UQK with a question. Yes, what's your first name?
First name is Rob. I'm coming to you from Deer Park, New York.
Okay, Craig recognized, Rich recognized, Rob recognized, and Wes recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
KZ2DAW, Curtis.
Curtis, do you have a question tonight?
Yes, I do.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't.
Anyone else want to put your name on the list for tonight? Okay, we'll take you first, Craig, since you're the first person who threw out your call sign. What's your question for tonight, Craig?
Got two. First, HF and QRP. Does it require to do HF, QRP? Because I'm looking at the ICOM 705 down the road.
Craig, is there any way you can boost your signal or move the antenna around? You're breaking up. You're about 40-50% noise.
My room as close as I can to the window.
Okay, that's good.
Alright, so QRP with HF, because I'm looking at the ICOM 705 at some point. Does it require a lot of patience when it comes to QRP with HF?
Well, it sort of depends upon the individual. Some people have an incredible amount of patience and will tell you no, and others have no patience and will tell you definitely yes. What's very important, in my humble opinion, is the mode that you choose. There are better modes for QRP than others. One of the worst modes I can imagine for QRP would probably be AM. And on the other end of the spectrum, guys who really love CW do very well with QRP. So if you're going to do single sideband, it's going to be a greater challenge than if you do some digital mode. Now, if you don't want to learn how to do CW Morse code, there are other options with the same benefits. You could take up any of the computer-controlled data modes, FT8 being the most popular this week. But there are others. There are PSK31, there's RTTY, there's all kinds of digital modes that will be more efficient with QRP than single sideband. But single sideband can be done if you have either a nice antenna or a lot of free time.
Sideband was going to be my main choice, mainly upper and lower.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I kind of thought that. Well, it's not going to be easy. It sort of really then depends upon your luck, the sunspot cycle, the amount of free time that you have, and the type of antenna system that you can deploy. Now, some people have a strict QRP setup. They have 5 watts of transmitted power. But sometimes they'll plug it into a antenna, you know, a massive antenna that's posted on a 100 or 200 foot tower. Now, to me, that's not exactly my idea of QRP. I can understand where they would, you know, read the letter of the law and say, well, it's 5 watts, it's QRP. So it also sort of depends upon the antenna system. The more of a compromise, the bigger challenge you're going to unfortunately have to deal with.
I was looking into doing this perhaps like at the beach or at the dock with probably like a 3 or a 4 foot antenna, if not maybe a 9 or a 10 foot. Probably I could just use the one strapped to my car with it off and just go from there, since I could just use the battery from the QRP. If not, I could use some other source of power perhaps. That was just my thought, but I got other ideas as I progress further.
Okay, I mean, there's two good places if you don't have a good antenna farm to radiate out of. Near waterfront is very good because you could get a lot of propagation off the surface of the water, so that's good. Or people who like to travel to elevated areas, you know, small mountains, very large hills, that also is a good place to run portable and low power. Again, you're not going to get as many contacts as if you pulled 100 watts, but, you know, some people really enjoy the challenge.
I would love to give it a try. I do thank you for that. Now, the other thing, DMV recently took my 35. Now, these new Excelsior plates that I'm seeing all over the place, I haven't yet to see what they look like as ham radio plates. I put in for picture, but I don't know what the design is, and I chose not to go for Excelsior. Does anybody else out there have Excelsior ham radio plates? I'd like to know what they look like.
Okay, I'll throw it out to the audience. If anyone out there has any experience, please hit that push the talk button.
Cellular ham radio?
No, he's talking about license plates.
Oh, sorry.
N2JWP.
Yes, N2JWP.
Okay, so the plates I got about, what's a year and a half, 2 years ago, are blue and white. They have a circle on the left that says amateur radio. There's no antenna, but it's a pretty pair of plates. I never put them on my vehicle, though. I'm still running with the old ones, and maybe I'll put them on when I get the next car. Back over to you. Name here is Mario.
Thank you very much, Mario. Anyone else with any experience with vanity ham plates for cars?
K2PJV with a comment.
Yes, PJV.
Yeah, call us Kilo 2, Papa Julia Delta. First name is Phil, Papa Hotel in the Alima. I'm on the DMV website right now. And it's saying that there's going to be no changes to picture plates. So there shouldn't be any new plates with the amateur radio, whatever you want to call it, logo. It remains unchanged according to the DMV website.
Okay, that's useful information. Craig, you know, you might want to check out their website and see what they have to say on that.
Right, because initially the older design, before they put the word Excelsior on the app, were gold plates. I am actually on the site now. Here is what the current plate is that I'm seeing the most. It says New York in gold, an orange circle with the tower, and the example call, K3G Y56, and the word amateur radio on the bottom. There is another design, which I think is an older one, which I don't think I will get. I will probably get the one I just mentioned a second ago. It's got blue stripes on the top and bottom, slightly different design tower on the left, and it says amateur radio under the tower instead of at the center of the bottom of the plate. And your call actually fits better on that one.
Okay, I'm just looking at the DMV. They really only show one. I don't think they're going to offer you more than one option. The picture that I see on my website is blue, yellow, and orange. And on top it says it has a blue border with a curved edge. It has New York printed out in kind of yellow. And then it has a symbol that says amateur radio with an antenna. It looks like an antenna tower, actually, but it's radiating at the very tip. And there's a little Morse code message and the call sign. And right below it in orange says the word amateur radio.
That's what I have, N2JWP.
Okay, Mario. Yeah, I think that's the one that they're offering at this point. I could be wrong, but that seems to be the one. You can't really go from older models because I don't think it's like a car dealership where they keep a couple in the back room or something.
It looks pretty attractive. Of what the older ones looked like, they were basically blue and red stripes on the top and bottom, but it didn't say amateur radio right in the middle. It was under the tower. And the call actually fits better. There's a little extra space versus this one. It's like taking up the whole plate, but that's probably the one I am expecting to get. That's all I've got for now. KD2OG, be back to net control. Roy.
Okay, very good, Craig, and I'm endlessly amused. They didn't want to type up someone else's call sign, so they, in the illustration, used a call sign that's not legal, K3GY56. So someone must have just typed out randomly on a keyboard or something. So that's amusing to me.
Only it could be made legal. It's extremely rare for double numbers to be in a ham call.
Well, it's legitimate in as a different prefix for a different country, but in the United States, we have a single-digit prefix, so you're not going to get anything like this in the United States. So, that was probably just some guy mocking it up at the motor vehicle department, and he may have known enough that that K3GY is a legitimate call sign, and he didn't want to get into trouble using someone's call sign on a DMV page, so he put the 5-6 over it or something. Or for all we know, it could be some guy's cousin who was born in 1956, and he's really K3GY, and it was a shout-out to him. We'll probably never know.
The world may never know. Just messing with you. All right, that's it. KD2OGB.
Okay, good luck with that, and, you know, when you try out your QRPing and you want to tell people about it, remember the technical net. We're always interested in hearing how questions turned out. Next on our list of check-ins is Rich, W2BZ. What's your question for tonight, Rich?
Hello, Roy, and hello, everybody else. And I wonder, before I ask the question, how's my signal tonight? Readable? Go ahead.
Yes, it's quite readable. There's a little hint of hiss in the background, but fine.
Okay, this is a computer question. I just spent the last 2 weeks rebuilding a crashed computer, bit by bit. I won't go into what bit by bit stands for, but I got the thing to work, except for Wi-Fi. Now, it comes up with a very specific error, but I have investigated this error and investigated this error and investigated this error, and nothing works. It's so, I guess, esoteric that you would have had to have dealt with it, I guess, and solved it to be able to answer the question, because just taking stabs at it, I don't think for this one, would work, be helpful. And the error is Wi-Fi doesn't have a valid IP configuration. Again, Wi-Fi doesn't have a valid IP configuration. I've tried everything that Microsoft has suggested. I've tried everything that everybody else has suggested, and they're basically the same with flushing the DNS and doing an IP config and everything. I did a scan, an SFC scan now. Everything comes up, and the computer works perfectly, except once again, Wi-Fi doesn't have a valid IP configuration. Has anybody out there wrestled with that error code in their trip through Microsoft Windows bill? Back to you, Roy.
NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
Yeah, I wrestled with that just today.
just today. The error is typically preceded by no internet, but you're connected. So your Wi-Fi is connected, but you're not getting internet. And I went through a bunch of stuff, that the flushing of the DNS cache. Another one was a net something, a bunch of DOS commands, rebooted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, finally, I did what I probably should have done first is I rebooted my router, and everything started working again. So maybe you want to try that if you have not yet.
Unfortunately, I've both rebooted the modem. I reset the router and the modem, and neither worked. So, anyone else? But I thought you had it there, Lou. I almost thought you had it. But I did that also, and like you, I did it last, not first. So, yeah, you're talking about NetFH, those DOS commands. NetFH flush DNS, NetFH flush WinSock. I did all those, and none of them worked. So, anybody else? I'll turn it back to Net.
Yeah, we also did IP config release, IP config renew, hope all the wax. You could also try to uninstall and reinstall your Wi-Fi driver, just for kicks.
Yeah, I tried that. Well, when you say Wi-Fi driver, what specifically are you talking about? The driver for the Wi-Fi card?
There's a couple of them. If you go to Device Manager and you go to the networking area and you right-click, look at properties. And also, look at properties. Make sure you're getting a local IP address. You're probably not. That's what I had noticed also. You maybe want to turn off IP6. Sometimes that gets in the way. But, yeah, if you go to the Device Manager, typically you can... you can uninstall. You right-click and you can uninstall menu. Click uninstall and then reinstall. Disable, enable. Sometimes you have to reboot for that to take effect. There's a whole plethora of wondrous, joyous things you could do.
What is IP6?
IP6 is the internet, the expanded address space on the internet. So you'll have a check mark on your properties, and you can disable or enable it for IP6. I don't think that we're hitting many IP6 sites yet, but that has, in some people's cases, been a problematic, and they turned that off, and they were able to work. So that's as opposed to the old IP4, which has a lot less address space out there in the internet world.
KG2RY.
IP6, FIX, not the number 6. Yeah. That I haven't tried. I haven't tried to, I know about that, and I forgot which one, when you run into internet problems, that is best to turn off, 4 or 6. But you say 6, so that I haven't tried. I could give that a try and see if that helps anything. That's about all I can think of. I mean, it's just amazing that I went through, and by the way, turning off IP6 is not one of the recommended Microsoft fixes, which if it does help, it's amazing that it's not a fix in there, you know. But everything else I've tried, I'll try this and I'll report back. Roy, I wonder if you have any ideas. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to recognize that David wanted to say something, but I'll say quickly. Have you set it only for dynamic IP addresses? And if so, have you considered trying it for static IP addresses? And if you've tried that, have you tried different addresses in your domain? You know, maybe there's something wonky with the particular IP address that it's picking up or failing to pick up.
Yes, I've gone to static IP addresses. you know, using Google, the 8.8.8.8, and then 8.8.4.4, and then the other ones within my, you know, 255.255.255.0. I've tried all that, and that didn't, going static didn't work either.
Yeah, that's solely, though, for the DNS server. I was thinking of trying to change the IP address of your computer itself. Maybe there's something that's corrupted in there that would work better with a different IP address for the actual computer that's using the Wi-Fi to get to the wireless router.
How do you do that? How do you change the computer's IP address?
You go into network. It's hopefully selected for the Wi-Fi driver, and you get into the properties, and you can either leave it as a dynamic IP address that's grabbed from the DHCP of your router, or you can switch it to a static. And then you could, as long as you give it an IP address on your network, it'll take.
Isn't that the same about what I just said? Going in and changing. I mean, are there two places actually to change the IP address from dynamic to static?
Well, but there's changing your IP address of your computer, and there's changing the DNS server. You can just as easily just change the DNS server and not do anything with your own local IP address, and if that's what's causing the problem, you would still have the problem.
Hey, I didn't do that either. I'll take a look at that. That's something that I've never tried, so I'll try unclicking IPv6 and changing that main IP address.
Okay, I mean, as long as you keep it in line with the submask that you have for your local network, you know, it's a possibility. David, you wanted to make a comment?
Yes, good evening, Roy, and hope you're all having a fantastic night. You know, I was thinking about these free programs that you can download, and what they do is they analyze your network so you can see if there's any weak links in the network chain. Problems here, problems there. So, you know, the software basically monitors your network.
Okay, yeah, there are programs like that. Most of them tend to be more commercial and either have a short lifespan as a trial basis and a heavy cost model because they're kind of designed for businesses. The more powerful and robust they are, unfortunately, the more likely they are to ultimately be a commercial product that has a commercial price.
Well, I know a program that could analyze your network. You don't have to pay anything. It's free. You know, if you want any of, like, the more advanced features, then it's, like, $7 a month, I think.
Okay, and what's the name of this product?
It's called Thing. Foxtrot, India, Nancy, Golf.
I know Thing is used a lot with cellular phones. I didn't know it was used with regular computers.
It analyzes the network. You find the function. You see if the network is operating optimally. If not, then you can find out like what's wrong and where it is.
Well, that would be sweet if it actually points to this error. And then tells me, what I love about Microsoft, the last thing you usually find in the instructions is ask a friend. Have you guys ever seen that? Ask a friend. That always gets me, if nothing else works. But I will see if Thing is available. and download it. I like I said, I know it's available as an app for cell phones. I didn't know it was available for PCs, but I will take a look. Back to net.
Yeah, but at least you don't know if there's something wrong and have an idea of where to look for it.
Or an iPhone or iPad app. It's not a Windows application. I'm not quite sure exactly what it does. I assume it's more of a IP sniffer, because we sort of talked about dynamic and static IP addresses about a month ago, and there are a lot of applications on cell phones that you can sniff your network and you can find out what IP addresses are used. It doesn't go, at least in the case of all the other software apps that I've experienced, that terribly deep about the network. You know, it might suggest that you have IP number collisions or such, but it's not going to kind of do Roto-Rooter work and probably figure out these particular things. But you could check into it. If it's a free app, then, you know, what do you got to lose?
Well, I've had good luck with it, Roy, especially getting these hotspots to get up and running.
Well, yeah, like I said before, IP sniffing is relatively simple. I have about two or three apps on my phone that do it to different degrees of user interface, fun. But there's a big difference, unfortunately, between just figuring out what IP addresses are logged into your network and finding out why a Wi-Fi device driver is having problems implementing a gateway to the Internet.
Yeah, but you have to know whether that particular device is having problems or not. Then, you know, you can focus on that. But as I say, you know, Roy, I'm not an expert at this. I'm only making suggestions.
No, I understand, David, and I thank you for that. Is anyone else with any good ideas of what might help Rich out with his Wi-Fi device?
KD2 UQK?
Yes.
So I heard you say it before, but I'll back you up on the static IP idea. As long as you keep the address within the router's addressing network that the DHCP server actually assigns, you should be good. Example being, if you use a 192.168.1.whatever address as your static IP, that should do it. The DNS server doesn't really have much to do with it. As long as you have a lined up default gateway and a correct correct IPv4 address within the router's existing addressing scheme, that should do it. Whether you have to provision that on your router or on your computer, you might have to do both. That should be the way to telltale if you're actually even getting into the router and having an assigned IP address.
Anybody know how to get into the admin setup on a Cablevision wireless router?
Wasn't there a password that the technician gave you? There might be a default password. You might want to Google it and find out what the router's default password. I mean, there was a whole bunch of routers that all had the same password, you know, PASSW0RD, and I think one day when I got an installation, the technician made a point of changing that 0 to a 1. So that was the big change in the password. But if you didn't set it, then chances are it's the default setting, and it's not that difficult to find.
NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
So the Optimum routers are remotely managed, so he's got to go into his Optimum account and under the Internet heading, click Router, and then he'll get access to his router. So that's the way they do it. They've modified the firmware so that you can't just get into it directly physically. You got to go through them. And once you do that, you can see what your IP ranges are. The thing is, you're not getting an IP address assigned. So that's your DHCP
server that hands out the local LAN addresses to your different devices, and that's typically on your router. That's why I'm suggesting you reboot it. But to get into it, you have to log into your Optimal Online account with your Optimal Online password. Once you get into that account, you go over to the Internet tab, and under that, you click Router. And it'll open up the router, and then you can follow the menus there, including setting your address ranges, et cetera. And if you want to do a static address, then you got to go back to your computer, and in your computer, assign that address. Otherwise, if you leave it on automatic rather than manual, then the DHCP server in the router will take care of that for you.
WB2BC.
Yes, BC.
Yeah, I just wanted to draw one little possibility that I had something similar to this reason. I couldn't connect to the internet at all, and it turned out to be a new setting I had added to my firewall, and that blocked the whole thing from getting anything. I believe the message was about the not getting a valid IP address. So, possibility. Just if you can turn off the firewall temporarily, see if it does anything.
Yes, I did do that. I did turn off the firewall, and that didn't do anything. I forgot to mention, and I guess this would change what Lou just suggested, that everything's okay on a laptop of mine. So whatever the wireless router is sending out is okay. It's computer specific.
Okay, I mean, that does thankfully limit your problem to that section. So unfortunately, it could be hardware, it could be the driver software, it could be the operating software, it could be the settings, it could be some setting interaction with the router that unbeknownst to everyone is causing problems. I don't know. Personally, one of the first things, and strikes me as one of the easier things, is to just come up with a reasonable static IP address for the computer and reboot it and see what happens. The worst comes to worst, it doesn't help. But that's probably where I'd go to next.
KG2R1?
Yes, David.
Bing for desktop, there's many more features on it. I compared it to the phone version, so you get to find out more, you know, on the desktop version.
Okay, so that's also an option for you, Rich.
All right, lastly, Lou has something to say, I think.
I was just going to say, you know, when you go into your DOS window and type ipconfig, see if you have a LAN address assigned to your computer. You probably don't.
KD2VDW?
Well, like I said, if the laptop is working fine, they have to be sending out two different IP addresses through DHCP to each machine. Except one of them isn't taking advantage of the IP address. So I don't know what could be wrong. And before the computer crashed, it was working fine with the same with the same wireless card. So I think that IP4, turning off IP6, sounds as close as I'm going to get, but I'm a little confused. Roy, is there or is there not a PC version, a Windows version of Fing? Go ahead.
Yeah, apparently there is. I don't know too much in the way of details. They kind of hide it at the bottom of their page. But, yeah, they seem to have a desktop version. And I'm not quite sure if it's a Windows desktop, but it is a desktop version.
Okay, I'll take a look at that. Thanks, guys. I guess I have enough to try now. Back to that. Thank you.
KD2VDW?
Yes, I believe your name is Michael. Please.
I would just say that if you're ready to throw it out the window, I would call Optimum Online, and if you can connect through Ethernet, let them get into your computer and check your settings. I mean, they must deal with this on a daily basis.
Well, Michael, though, I see a significant problem there. Since his problem is that he can't use the desktop to get to tunnel into the Internet, there would be no way that I could figure out that he could be remoted the other way around. They could remote into his router, but they couldn't particularly get all the way into his computer because of the problem he's having.
So my understanding was it was Wi-Fi specific, that he might be able to Ethernet into the computer.
Okay, that's a good question. I assumed that that Rich's connections are all wireless, that he doesn't have an Ethernet port, but I could be completely wrong. Rich, are you able to use a wired connection to get into the desktop?
I can. I've just been dealing with the wireless problem, but that may be a suggestion too. If in fact I do connect it up with a wire, with a Cat 5 wire or whatever, and it works, that's telling me that it's, well, I'm back to where I started. I have no Wi-Fi. And that's a problem with some of the digital stuff I do. But I could try a last resort. I could grab a piece of cable, internet cable, and connect it directly from the router into the computer. Go ahead.
Okay, but I mean, if you have access to an Ethernet cable, and you plug your computer into one end and the wireless router into the other end, it'll communicate via the router, so any wireless device in your house that's logged into that router should still be able to interact with the wired connection of your desktop.
So we're talking about two different things, a wireless router and a wireless adapter. It's the adapter end of things that I'm having a problem with. The adapter is a mix. I have a TV that's working wirelessly, and I have a laptop that's working wirelessly. So it has something, and it's two adapters, not one. I have two previously working Wi-Fi adapters, so it has something to do with that, call it circuit, that was working previously, then it would have to do with the wireless router. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's sort of a different kettle of fish, if you will. If you're having problems with multiple wireless devices simultaneously, it no longer becomes likely that your computer is causing the problems, and the more that, although your router isn't 100% broken, that there's something really wonky going on with it, and it either needs to be reset or twiddled with or replaced. So I wasn't aware of that. I thought it was primarily your desktop that was having problems using its wireless connection. But it seems the way you're explaining it, that in addition to the desktop, there's two other devices that can't access the wireless router. So that kind of would tend to indicate that there's something wonky with the router, not with the desktop.
No, it was the other way around, Roy. Sorry if I misspoke. The TV and the fine, wirelessly, they work fine. It's just the computer with one of two different wireless adapters that's not working.
Okay, so we fall back to the original comment that I made that even if you have to wire that desktop, you should still be able to use all the other wireless devices in your house and communicate with the desktop through the wired connection, unless I'm missing some aspects of this question.
KD2VDW?
Yes, Michael.
Yeah, if you can connect that computer through Ethernet and get it connected to the internet, you can assure that your driver isn't the issue, that your wireless device isn't just with a bad driver. So if you could do that, you can get remote help and you can knock out a few of the birds so that you can focus on different things.
I have not tried to go wired with it before this, and I will do that, in fact, tonight sometime. So thanks, guys. I really appreciate all your help. Give me some good ideas. 52 Bravo Zulu, back to me.
Okay, very good, Rich. I wish you good luck with it, and let us know how it all turns out. Next on my list is Rob, KD2UQK. What's your question or topic tonight, Rob?
Well, good evening to everybody. This is Rob, KD2UQK. I had a quick antenna question. I'm using a couple of different HTs, and I'm trying to measure SWR the correct way for a couple of rubber duck antennas that I'm using. They're Motorola multi-band different antennas, and I've gotten different suggestions on how to actually correctly measure SWR. The way I've been doing it is been using an SWR meter just in line in between the HT and the antenna, but people have said that doesn't give necessarily an accurate SWR because the antenna, it changes once you have the counterpoise of the actual chassis of the radio. I've been suggested use a cookie tray with an SMA antenna, SMA connector on it, and then just having the SWR meter run in between that so I have a ground plane for the antenna, or to use a field strength meter and actually measure the actual field intensity of the antenna. Do you guys have any suggestions for that?
Okay, I mean, those two suggestions that you were given sounds very good. Doing a BISWA analysis of a handheld radio can demoralize people. They expect the same thing, patterns that they get when they have freestanding antennas. And the problem with handy talkies is that your body is part of the counterpoise. Without it, it's not much of a good match, and the VISWA is awful. So a field strength meter would at least give you a better sense for how much is getting out. Anyone else with any other ideas of an optimum way to measure the VISWA of a rubber ducky? And, you know, rubber duckies are really nice in that they're small and unobtrusive. But they're the lowest gain, you know, negative gain antennas. You know, they're a little bit better than the average dummy load. But anyone out there with other ideas of what would be a good way of testing the VISWA of a handy talkie a rubber ducky?
WB2KWC?
Yes, Ken.
Okay, foolish question, but does it matter? I mean, a rubber ducky radiates so little and within such a close range, I don't know, do you really need to optimize it for SWR?
I tend to think it's more of a case of intellectual curiosity. You know, some people really like to know exactly how all their equipment works, good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, it's just Rob with a follow-up to that. It's just I've been measuring these multiple antennas, and they're not low quality. They're OEM Motorola antennas, you know, and it's just the one I have specifically is optimized for UHF. But I'm getting, like, SWRs of 1.9 and 2.1. It feels like it's way too much, but it seems to work very well for my purposes. You know, I just, you know, coming from other antennas that you get SWRs of under, you know, 1.1 even,
you know, almost perfect SWR. It's just seeing antennas that have nearly doubled that. It's just kind of demoralizing. Is there a point to chasing a smaller SWR or just using a different antenna?
Well, as Ken points out, there are good compromise antennas, and then there are good antennas, and there's a difference between the two. Rubber duckies are not built for gain, and even Motorola would tell you that without making up any kind of stories. So when it's a high-quality rubber ducky, the most important thing to those engineers is that it's halfway decent and that it's sturdy and that you can't break it and that it won't get any worse than it is. But as Ken mentioned, you don't really expect a great deal of gain off of these type of antennas. So personally, I would simply go by experience rather than numbers because it's so difficult to make sense of the true standing wave ratio, because it's very difficult to model yourself inside the antenna model because, again, you're part of the counterpoise. There's a difference between the radiation pattern of a handy talkie that's sitting in free space with a wire and you're at the other end of it toggling it off and on versus you with your hand wrapped around the chassis, which is acting as the counterpoise. We're all a little wary of RF, but that's what's really going on. So I would say that VisWatt is important to a degree for most antennas, but when you get to things like rubber duckies, it becomes less significant. As it is, people tend to overdo the concept of a VisWatt. A lot of people will give their ITs for a 1-to-1 perfect VisWatt, whereas a 1-to-1.1 or 1.2 is a negligible loss of power. So we tend to overemphasize VisWatt a little bit. But again, in the case of a rubber ducky, if you get through, then it's fine. Don't worry too much about the numbers. It'll drive you crazy.
All right. Thanks, Roy. I do appreciate the input. Yeah, it's just been driving me crazy because I've been getting weird numbers like 3.1, 2.1, 2.5 on, pretty common frequencies. So I just, all right, I'll go based on experience, based on performance rather than strictly numbers. All right. I thank you for the comments, Roy, and everybody else on the net. KD2UQK, this is Rob. I'll be on the side. Listen.
You're welcome, Rob. Thank you for participating tonight. Again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy. And next on my list is Curtis, KC2DAW. What's your question for tonight, Curtis? Perhaps Curtis stepped away for a second. If you're out there, Curtis, KC2DAW, waiting for your question or your comment for tonight.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I remember when he checked in, he changed his mind. He said he didn't have a question. Curtis.
Okay, I must have missed that comment. Okay, thank you very much, Paul.
NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
There's a fellow who checked in from Yapank on the East End, but I'm not sure if you heard him because he said he had a question and then you said, do you have a question? And I'm listening to this East End, so I don't hear the West End when there's a double. So there might be a fellow still out there, I don't know, from Yapank.
Well, that was probably Curtis, because sometimes Curtis checks in just to check in, and that's why I asked him if he had a question tonight, and I thought he said yes. K2HDU. Say again your call sign.
K2HDU, Eric, and I'm Yapank.
Oh, okay, Eric. Do you have a question for tonight?
Yes, thank you. My question concerns antennas. Is it possible, and will it work, if I took a random length long wire and wrapped it around a long pole to make it to work as a short vertical.
Okay, so basically you're talking about a spiral. You're talking about a coil, right?
Oh, well, basically a very loose coil, you know, not the wires touching, just maybe a 10-foot pole with 40 feet of wire wrapped around it.
Okay, would it be anything like a stretched-out slinky, if you remember the toy slinkies?
Yeah, it would be like a slinky, but, you know, it would be wrapped on something. A slinky would just be hanging in free space. The problem is I'm in a restricted area, so I have to be careful with antennas, and I really can't hang up a random length long wire and keep it up for very long.
Okay, I mean, theoretically, I mentioned slinkies because there are things that are called slinky antennas, where people go out and buy regular slinkies and cut them to a certain length and then suspend them, and they sort of work. Theoretically, it doesn't have to be strung one end to the other and to each end. You can kind of support it with a non-conductive dielectric material and orient it in, say, a vertical orientation rather than a horizontal orientation. It's possible to get to tune it with the right impedance matching circuitry. It would have some problems, the takeoff angle, the polarization angle, the efficiency. It has a lot of problems in it, in that because of its structure, you're not going to get either a vertically or a horizontally polarized radiation pattern. You'll probably get a circular one, which is going to be about at least 3 decibels lower than if you had a horizontal or vertical going to another horizontal or vertical. You get some inductive losses between the coils because they act like inductors. You get some capacitive losses. So the efficiency drops down a bit. The takeoff angle is anyone's guess, and the polarization angle is circular. So it's doable. I'm not quite sure how useful it might be. It might be worth an experiment, you know, again. You could either do it freehand, or you can buy yourself just a plain old metal slinky and test it out. It would be a rather fascinating experiment at the very least.
Okay, thank you for that. I'll have to give it some more thought. Maybe I'll find some way to put it vertical.
Yeah, it's problematic. Compromise antennas are kind of the standard in the metropolitan area. And, you know, there's all kinds of little books out there about stealth antennas. For a long time, people were getting away with semi-murder by putting a vertical in a flagpole. Fiberglass flagpole acted as a great hiding place for an antenna. And I've heard strange stories of guys who have extendable masts, and they raise their masts at night and they drop them down at dawn. So, you know, everyone's kind of scratching their head trying to figure out the best stealth antenna. So I wish you well with your future plans, and if you have any questions or if you make any discoveries, please feel free to drop in and tell us about them.
Thank you very much. I guess I'm going to just come up with some other ideas, but I'll get something to work. I want to do it for HF, and being in a convo with HF could be a problem.
Yeah, I could understand that. I mean, I'm going to throw a name out. I'm not going to tell you that I recommend it because I know nothing about it. It harkens back to about 8, 9, maybe 10 months ago. There's a company called Compactenna that makes an interesting mobile UHF-VHF antenna that some people who are members of LIMARC swear by. They found that, you know, going into enclosed areas, the signal wasn't blocked, and they love it. And this guy is supposedly selling versions that are operational on HF. Again, I have no clue whether this stuff works, but you might want to Google it, and maybe it'll give you a good idea or something you could build on your own. So his company, I believe, is called Compactana.
And I will give it a look. Thank you.
You're welcome.